I hereby introduce to you Mr. Michael Veazey.
Hey, 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 welcome to Amazing FBA, the place to be for UK-based Amazon entrepreneurs. I'm your host, Michael Veazey. Welcome to the show. Well, welcome back to part two of the interview with Manuel Beckvar. Very exciting stuff because Manuel is a softly spoken Austrian. He's not a big charismatic American in his manner, but his expertise is very, very deep. He's been out in Hong Kong for 11 years, sourcing products for big retailers. So he really, really knows his business. And last episode, he talked us through how to make a $10 product into a $30 product with just $2 worth of changes, which is just magic. So please go and listen to that if you haven't caught it already. It's at episode 51. As ever, amazingfba.com/5151. So this episode has lots more fantastic value in, including getting quality control for electronics, which is something I'm personally very interested in, having failed the first time out. Simple ways to deal with freight and your overall process for supply. And yeah, the future of Amazon, where is it going? Always good to know. Because if you want to future-proof your business, of course, you've got to deal with your business as it is now and adjust. But it's very, very good to see the trends coming and get ahead of the trends. So Manuel's one of those people who's plugged right into the suppliers and where they're at. And also working with the big retailers has given him an idea of how they think as well. So great stuff. Enjoy, as ever, listen to the interview, but also read the show notes at www.amazingfba.com/53. Enjoy the interview.
How do you keep your money safe and avoid getting, as you say, ripped off in the whole China thing?
So let's say I placed an order, everything's going well. I will tell him right away when I place the order, look, my friend, I'm going to send an inspection when the production is finished, or let's say when 80% of the production is finished. And if there is a fail, you have to rework the goods and you have to pay for the reinspection, and you're not getting the rest of your money unless the inspection is passed. So one thing that I never do is 100% upfront payment. I always go with 30 to 30% down payment and 70% once the inspection is passed and the goods are ready to ship out. That means, well, maybe I lose my 30% deposit, but I definitely do not lose my 70% unless the inspection is passed. So one thing I tell everyone, even if your order amount is just $1,000, please get an inspection. There are companies out there that do an inspection with a 20 pages PDF report for $100. Like, for example, Trigo inspection is one of them. If I have a very simple product, I usually hire them. They charge $100. They send someone to the factory, check my production, and they send me a 20 pages report. And if the report is passed, I will release the rest of the money to the supplier.
Wow. So they're $100. Is that for what, one man day, as they call it?
Yes, that's one man day.
Well, that's cheap, because I've heard that quite a few places like Asian inspection or whatever are supposed to be good, but they, I think they're sort of $300 for a man day or something. So that sounds very good value.
Correct. So I use Asia inspection for difficult and complicated products like electronics. But let's say, I don't know, you have a comb or a beard brush. There's no use in paying $300 or $500 for an inspection when you can do it for $100. Because it's a simple product.
Excellent. Now, tell me about you. You're leading very neatly into my next question, which is electronics. Now, the advice famously is, which I read just after I'd placed my very first order for a product, which was electronics, was don't order electronics from China. The defect rates can average around 10%. And sure enough, I at that point didn't know. This is back in sort of June, July of 2014, which seems like in the dark ages in Amazon. And I ordered some products, and sure enough, these electronic products came in. I had 500 units of something I'd ask for a small modification on, and yet about 50 of them were defective and discovered over in America. So yeah, it was about 11% defect rate. So that was my first learning about how not to source electronics from China. But so what is the correct way to ensure quality control with electronics? Because it is famously difficult, but obviously you've got it cracked.
Well, I guess I have a bit of an advantage because I have 17 years of experience in electronics. So I do know what to pay attention to, which certificates do I need, and what component I need to lay an eye on in terms of inspection. So if you don't have that, yes, I don't recommend you go into electronics on your first or second product. But if you do later on, I mean, as long as you have all the certificates that you need, and as long as the sample has been tested and it's okay, And very important, you need to have an inspection. Inspection companies know what they need to look for when they inspect an electronic product. Yeah, once the inspection is passed, ship it to Amazon. Why not? There is a higher defect rate. It's true. I think my products average about 4% right now on the defects. But I also found that a lot of customers have no idea how to handle electronic products. So they just simply send it back in and ask for a refund.
Right.
For example, this smartwatch that I had listed on Amazon, it was a very complicated product and I had a very high return rate and had these shipped to me later, the returned ones. And I figured they're all working just fine, but the customer just didn't know how to work them. So that goes into the defect rate too.
Okay, so maybe there's a big hint for two things not to go into to start with. One is electronics in general, and then the other one is sophisticated product that requires an intelligent consumer at the other end of the process as well. Interesting. So if you do go into electronics later, and that is something that in the marketplace, I'm in the music marketplace, so there are a few items there. I tend to sell, obviously not instruments, which are huge and very brand-driven, but the accessories. Is there a way that you can reduce the defect rate further than, say, 4% or so?
Difficult. I think you need to take, let's say, reviews and customer complaints and defect issues into consideration. Go to your supplier and say, look, 5 out of 10 defects have this particular defect. Can you improve that? And usually they can. And I think that's a way how to reduce the defects. But other than that, you can also tell the inspection company to look especially for the defects in the previous order and tell them to pay more attention to that. But I think I'm doing all of that, and anything below 5%, I think, is a good rate on defects in electronics. Anything above, maybe your product has a general problem and you should, not go into it any further. Maybe you should drop it after all.
Interesting. Well, actually, I have to say that my first variation, I think it's because they did a slight difference in the finish of the plastic, which I thought looked smarter, but maybe they just weren't geared to that product properly in the factory and they did, mess that up. But I have to say my defect rate on one of my electronic products is running at just below 2%. So obviously that's pretty good. I thought that was bad, but obviously that's better than average. Okay. Maybe I've got a good supplier then. Good. It's certainly very, very responsive. I mean, like, I can Skype him at sort of all sorts of crazy times, like midnight in the UK, and it's 7 a.m. and he's there, so he's very responsive. But that's very interesting. So, I know what you're saying about that 5 out of 10 products will often have the same issue. I mean, for example, with one of the products I've got is battery powered, and the simple old battery pack, just what the lid won't go on it properly. So that's something I have to go back and address. But that's not even an electronic problem as such. I'm sure that can be solved, actually. It's very interesting that you say that, that most defects will result from one or two physical or electronic particular things, actually. So you've got to nail those things down. Well, thank you very much. So that's about as far as we can go with quality control. I'm glad that my supply is better than I thought. That's nice to know. Now, tell me about the next nightmare for new importers, which is freight, that whole area. First of all, what is the difference between air freight and air courier? Is there a difference there? Do we need to know about that?
Yes. Air courier is usually DHL, UPS, FedEx, and the likes. That's air courier. They have a very special customs clearance channel. Therefore, and they handle the entire process for you. So let's say DHL picks up your goods at the factory and they send them straight to the Amazon warehouse. They take care of all the customs, of all the clearances and whatnot. And therefore, they are more expensive. They are an all-in solution. And all you do is you tell them where to pick it up and where to deliver. And at the end, you get an invoice. Sometimes it's prepaid. And that's it. Now, air freight is the exact same process, but it's not courier like DHL or UPS. It's usually a logistics company that works with the big airlines, let's say Air China or China Eastern Airlines, or sometimes United, for example. And they do the exact same thing as a courier, but there's a lot more paperwork involved and you need to be involved. So you need to be the importer of record. You need to tell them who is the ultimate consignee. If you don't have a customs bond, you need a customs bond, or you can use the supplier, the forwarder's customs bond. So it's a complicated process and you need to know the process. Otherwise, it can become very difficult. Now, let's say couriers, I have had rates as low as $4 per kilo. And just recently, air freight shipped out for like $2.3 per kilo. So I'd say there's at least a $2 difference between those two.
Oh wow, okay, so that is really quite a big difference. So my tiny personal story on this is that I've used Air Courier for just about everything I've done from one factory, and this is the same guy who was producing these slightly defective electronics products, and then suddenly used air freight via I think it was China Airlines or whatever it was, and suddenly people were getting hold of me saying, you haven't got this piece of paper, you haven't got that, you haven't got the other, so it suddenly became very much more complicated.
Right.
So I'd certainly, from my perspective as the ignorant becoming gradually educated by life, say that you should start off with Air Courier because it's so much simpler.
Yes.
I'm glad you'd agree with that. Tell me a little bit more. How does one set up the process? What's the simplest possible way to get the Air Courier thing done?
Well, I usually would ask the supplier, the factory. I mean, they send out goods on a daily basis. They have great rates with both Air Couriers and air freight companies. I try to work with the supplier's courier or forwarder. And just tell him, look, this is the delivery address. I need to get this to the US or UK or whatever. And I need all delivery and duties and import taxes paid up front. So you tell him, this is where I deliver. This is where you need to deliver to. Give me a price. And they usually can help you with that. If they don't have a forwarder, then I'd suggest you look on sites like Alibaba. When you just input logistics company, you find like a thousand companies, and they can help you also on that.
Okay, so a couple of questions then. First of all, I know that from my experience with trying to work with various suppliers that it's not so common that they'll do and this of course brings us on to Incoterms as well, which we'll talk about in a second briefly, but it's not so common for them to offer to take it all the way from the factory gates to America and cover the duty. Normally they will do, is it DDU, delivered duty unpaid? So how do you persuade your suppliers to go for the delivered duty paid, i.e. they take care of everything? And if you have to do the DDU route, what's the simplest way to avoid all the problems that can happen?
Actually, that's a very good question. Suppliers usually have no idea on how to deal with all the freights and customs and duties and so on, because they simply are a factory. They put the produced goods at the corner of their warehouse and then, guys, please pick it up. You know, right. So they produce it, and then they want you to take care of the transport because they are specialized in the manufacturing and they're not specialized in transport. So that's why I work with a freight forwarding company. I usually have DDP, delivery duty paid.
Yeah.
I know I'm paying a little bit more than if I had DDU, because if I asked them to they actually do it all in for me. So the company that I'm working with, they pick it up at the factory. They ship it to the Amazon warehouse. Obviously, I need to give them instructions, but they take care of the entire process for me. So I don't need to get myself involved in the Amazon appointments or in the customs clearance. This is all done by the freight forwarder. And because I've trained them on how to deliver to Amazon directly, I don't have to do it anymore. But in the beginning, I also had to explain them how to do it, where to book appointments with Amazon and so on. Yeah.
Okay. So do you mean that you deliver directly from the China factory to the Amazon warehouses? You don't have a receiving warehouse or a friend in the USA or anything who will receive the goods?
Never. Always directly from China to the Amazon warehouse. No intermediate. How do you say that? Intermediate?
Yeah, no intermediary. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what, that's very interesting indeed. Yeah, or intermediate steps, I see what you mean. Yeah. What do you do about the damage to packaging from air freight or whatever? Do you think that's just a small percentage that it doesn't matter, or?
I think it's just a small percentage. And one tip that I can give your listeners is always put a sticker or a printing on the export carton that says fragile, handle with care. Even if you ship, foam or pillows.
Yeah.
Always say that you have something breakable inside the carton. And that usually helped me a lot to minimize damage. Well, sometimes they are damaged, but you know, what can you do with air freight? Just put the sticker on it or have it printed on. And I think that helps already.
That's an interesting tip. Thank you. So the next thing to ask really about that is how you train your freight forwarder in a simple way. Are you dealing with a Chinese freight forwarder, or are they based in Hong Kong? Are they based in the USA?
They have multiple offices, but the head office is actually in China, in Shenzhen. And I work with them mainly through email, phone calls, and Skype. In the beginning, they knew how to deliver to the US and take care of everything, but they never. And I chose them because they had the best prices on the market, and they always were super helpful. And eventually I made him a workflow chart, what steps they have to follow. And I think after the second order that I processed through them, they were pretty much clear on everything. And from there on, actually, we never had any more hiccups. So I'm very happy working with them now. But I had to train them, yeah. I had to give them a workflow.
So basically, you found somebody based on price and relationship, but they delivered to the USA, but they hadn't delivered to Amazon. So they kind of ticked most of the boxes, but not all. Is that right?
Exactly, yes.
Okay, so you don't really want somebody who doesn't know about exporting to the USA already, I suppose.
Ideally, if you find someone who has a great price and has experience dealing with delivering to Amazon, I mean, go for it. Why not?
And how did you find this wonderful person?
good question. Well, since I've been in the industry for a very long time, I've worked with hundreds of forwarders already. And, you know, I just narrowed them down when it came to my own business. And I looked at who I was most comfortable working with. Then that's how I went with them, I guess.
Great. And would there be anybody that you would be willing to share their details of a good freight forwarder with the listeners?
Sure. I mean, people can look it up. They're called Dolphin Logistics, based in Shenzhen. If you just Google it, Dolphin, like the animal, logistics, I think .com even, people can look them up. But they can also get the contact from me if they want to reach out.
Lovely. Thank you. And I'll make sure that we put contact details at the end of the show, and we'll put them on the show notes as well, of course. Now, tell me a bit about air freight then, because I'm very attracted by this low price, because I've done air courier up till now, and I'm getting sometimes up to sort of $6 a kilo delivered duty unpaid. So that's not particularly great pricing, I realize, but you know, it's small orders, so I can't be too fussy about it. But tell me about air freight. What's the sort of reasonably pain-free way to set that up?
Well, first of all, the $6 that you're paying are average. It's not bad. It's not great either, but I think it would be okay. Now, the air freight cost that I'm having is also because I have about 28 cubic meter per month. So I'm getting a great rate. So even if I give you guys my contact, I don't think you can get the same price that I get, because I simply deliver such a high volume every month.
Right.
Now, anyway, if you want to contact some of these air freight companies, I guess you just have to deliver your business process, and you just tell them, look, my main business is sending from China to Amazon, and I need you guys to pick up my goods. I need you guys to be the customs broker for me in the US. I need you guys to handle the import taxes and duties. And I need you guys to make appointments with Amazon. Amazon actually has a vendor website where logistics companies can set up an account and can then make appointments with Amazon, because you can't just drive to Amazon and deliver your products. You need to make an appointment. Lay down the process to the freight forwarder and see if he can do it. Ideally, he has already handled one or two Amazon orders before. Go from there.
Excellent. So basically, you give them your business process, you tell them what you need them to be custom broker and handle basically the entire customs clearance thing, as well as the taxes and appointments with Amazon. And then they're going to need to sign up with Amazon and make appointments, basically. And then once that's done. Yeah. So I guess you'd start with a small order and make sure that the thing was working first, and then start bigger orders once it's up and running, that kind of thing.
Exactly. Yeah.
Excellent. So tell us more about sending inventory direct to Amazon from China, because that's something that a few people do. Sometimes it seems to go badly. Sometimes, obviously, you're saving quite a lot of money with the intermediate steps, like FBA inspection or Earth Class Mail or something. They can cost quite a lot of money in my experience. So that's another attractive thought. And what are the risks and how do you mitigate the risks?
I think it's a waste of money to hire any prepping, labeling, mail forwarding company, because it can all be done in China. All you have to do is tell your factory, look, guys, the carton needs to be according to Amazon requirements. For example, it can't be any longer than, I think it's 62.5 centimeter on any side of the carton. Then you need to put the FN SKU or the UPC or the EAN barcode onto the packaging. The inner box, the product packaging. And on the export carton goes the shipping label that you also get on Seller Central. And you're good to go. I mean, you don't need anything else. Obviously, you need an inspection to make sure products have been manufactured according to your requirements. And then, you know, let the forwarder pick it up. And that's all you really need for prepping and labeling and shipping.
Right. So basically you go into Amazon Seller Central, you set up your shipping plan, mm-hmm. and then at that point you go through that process and it will give you a bunch of barcode, well, addresses and whatever barcodes as well that you stick on the cartons, and you basically send those over to the guys in China and that's it.
Correct. One thing I should mention though, you need to palletize. So you need to palletize in China. Otherwise, I mean, Amazon does accept small parcel orders just in cartons. But if you're shipping, let's say, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 cubic meter, or I don't know, like 200 boxes, you need to palletize. So your supplier needs to palletize the product for you.
Okay. So if if you're shipping, say, I had an order for, say, 500 units recently, that was 100 units per box. So just 5 boxes plus 1 box of spare packaging. Could that just go as it is? It didn't need palletizing?
That's called floor loading. You don't need any cartons. You don't need any pallets. You just send it in as it is. But, you know, obviously, once you go anywhere from 20, 30 cartons or bigger, you should palletize. Otherwise, Amazon may give you a hard time accepting your goods.
Right. Yeah. And Amazon is good at giving us a hard time every so often anyway. So we're not going to give them an excuse. So basically, from 20 cartons up, you're probably looking at palletizing, I guess.
Yeah, I'd say so. 20 cartons up. Yeah.
Excellent. Right. What other ways can you speed up your supply chain? That's obviously one, which cuts out, say, a week while Amazon prep services sort of mess about and don't do with things. Sometimes they seem to get very busy. What other ways can you speed up your supply chain?
I guess don't take care of the little things by yourself at some point. I mean, if you have a, I don't know, 10, 15 units going on, and you constantly also need to take care of customer service or shipping labels or listing or descriptions or taking photos, you know, for your listing. I mean, hire someone, outsource everything that you possibly can. Like, there's a lot of virtual assistants that you can hire online for little money that will save you a lot of time, and have someone take care of all the little things for you, and focus on growing your business by implementing more and new products, by maybe optimizing some of the listings that you have, and, you know, even look outside of Amazon, other e-commerce channels, or even, you know, going down to your local store and say, guys, I have a product here. Are you interested in buying 50 units from me? So, you know, try to expand the business and let someone take care, hire someone that takes care of the little things along the supply chain.
That makes a lot of sense. So tell me more about expanding the business. So this is quite a big topic, but just let's touch on this briefly. The whole business of selling to retailers, is that something you've done yourself?
Yes, I actually went the opposite way in the beginning. When I started my own business, I knew of Amazon, but I had no idea about FBA. I pretty much thought, okay, this is another eBay. But it turns out it was not. So I initially started by introducing my products, the ones that I improved, to the retailers, to the contacts that I made through those 11 years in Hong Kong. And I started from there. But I guess it is easier if you start on Amazon, build a brand, build a reputation for your products, have a good rating on Amazon, and then reach out to retailers or to discounters or to DIY stores or even other online sites, you know, and just approach them, tell them about your product, see if they're interested in buying wholesale from you. Yeah, take it from there.
Okay. And is there anything in your famous ebook about that whole process?
No, not really. The ebook is really focused on the importing part,
about importing. Right. Okay. Yeah. Have you got any other tips? I mean, obviously that you could spend, you know, an entire course on that, but have you got any other tips on the best way to approach retailers?
I guess you could start locally. Let's say you live in the UK and then you kind of know the big brands, but maybe you need to look into the smaller importers that sell to the big brands. I guess one way of doing that would be going to an exhibition and approach local distributors there and say, tell them about your idea. Now, if you can't go to an exhibition, the least thing you could do is you could go onto that exhibition's website and check out the names of all the companies that exhibit at this particular exhibition. And I guess you could also do this online, just finding the contacts from the website of the exhibition and, you know, check out what do the companies do that exhibit and approach them by email saying, hey guys, this is Manuel. This is my brand. I know you are selling these products in the UK. I'm importing directly from China. Are you interested in buying? You know, obviously a bit more details and stuff.
Yes, of course. No, but I like the approach. So basically go to an exhibition and approach people seems like a good idea as well. Actually, it's just sort of creating a little bit of a face-to-face rapport, I suppose, and then taking it from there.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
That seems excellent. So we've touched on a couple of things that I was going to ask you about, how to protect our brand, business, or individual products against competition a year or two down the line. You've already touched on having, you know, unique products and having really good product quality. Are there any other ways to protect your brand against competition?
Well, one obvious thing you can do is have a brand registry on Amazon. The second thing you can do is just be better. I mean, be better in terms of quality. Don't go for low entry price and low quality products, and don't give the competition any grounds to attack you. I mean, in terms of quality of the product, in terms of your customer service, like, do you reply all your emails of your customers? And, you know, just try to be an awesome company. Even if you're not making great profits in the first few months, eventually it will pay off having superior products and being known for excellent customer service, for example.
Yeah, that makes sense. So building a reputation by being a good company, good products, good service.
Yeah.
What's your prediction about what's coming? Obviously, competition keeps growing. Mm-hmm. What do you think is going to happen in the next year or two in terms of competition, and what sort of strategies would you have in place to deal with that?
Mm-hmm. Well, since I also have a sourcing company here in Hong Kong, I get a lot of FBA sellers inquiries. I feel that no one is creative anymore these days. I mean, just
right.
I think last month I got 6 inquiries on this stainless steel tumbler that everyone is selling. So to the really serious FBA sellers out there who are trying to build a brand, to build an assortment, you know, to build a company, be unique, have specialty on your products, have expertise on your product, and be creative, because the mass that is trying to sell on Amazon and the future of Amazon is that there will be thousands of competitors. You know, only the strong survive, and you need to wrap up your game, not wrap up, you need to step up your game and improve. I think I've been repeating myself now that, you know, you just need to have a superior product. But Amazon itself is growing rapidly. Lots of sellers now, but also the consumers are increasing. I mean, I think every 51 cents in the US online is spent on Amazon, and the rest is separated with, I don't know, 100, 100, 200, 300 different e-commerce channels. But Amazon only is 51 cents of the dollar on any purchase on Amazon online in the US.
Yeah, so they really have got kind of almost a monopoly, not quite, but approaching it on the US online sales.
So there will always be a customer who will buy your product. So I wouldn't worry about not being able to sell your products, because the market is just so huge. And I don't know how many, what's the population of the US?
About 300 million or something like that.
300 million. Yeah. So there you go.
Yeah. There are lots of customers out there. Well, Manuel, it's been really, really interesting, and some really golden nuggets about the, you know, the details of the process. But also, I really like your approach to building a quality brand and just being creative. I love what you say, like, you know, what's happened to people's creativity has gone out of the window. And I think when it comes to Amazon selling, that certainly can be true. So it's the good old fashioned, be creative, be original, have high quality products and treat your customers well, from what you're saying.
Exactly.
So thank you very much for your great thoughts. Now, how do people find out more about you? You've also mentioned Import Dojo and the ebook, which I have to say, having downloaded it, is very, very detailed, extremely helpful. That's something I'm beginning to digest. How can we find out more about you or learn from you?
First of all, thanks a lot for having me on the show. Big, great pleasure. Happy to do another one in the future if you want.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. And yes, we'd love to have you back, because there's lots of detail when it comes to suppliers and freight. And I'd love to pick your brains about lots of different things. So definitely love to have you back.
Absolutely.
So thank you very much. And how do people contact you?
I guess you can just go on importdojo.com. There is a contact us site. So just look there. Or I think people can also email me directly at mail@importdojo.com. But then again, there's all the contact information on my site. Feel free to reach out there. Download the ebook. It's free. You'll get my newsletter. I'll not be annoying you. But yeah, I also have a newsletter there. So when people subscribe, they get that too.
Amazing. Once again, thank you so much for your excellent information and for your company.
Thanks for having me. Thanks, Michael.
Thank you.
Well, an excellent guy, Manuel Beckvaez, and he's somebody that Danny McMillan met very recently in Canton. So if you're interested in that, we'll put a link in the show notes as well. I know that Danny's just written a fantastic piece on the old Canton Fair and how to deal with it best. And lots of gurus are charging tens of thousands for really crazy amounts of money for taking people around Canton, sort of handholding. But Danny did it kind of guerrilla style and has learned the lesson. So do go and check that out as well. But Manuel gives lots and lots of input there. So he is fast becoming an authority in Amazon, as well as Danny, who is like the center of all the Amazon people I know, I have to say. Danny's going to be back with us very soon. Meanwhile, I think you should go back and really, really listen to the detail of what Manuel had to share, because there's some real, real gold nuggets in there. Electronic products is a hard thing to deal with. And really the importance of the inspection and exactly how to do it, that's a really crucial thing that Manuel's covered for us fantastically clearly there. And also just the whole way of working with suppliers, you know, the sort of collegiality and yet the rigor with which he researches everything, and the ways of dealing with freight as well, just to keep it simple. It's just all fantastic stuff. And it's a lot of it's in the detail. A lot of retail is detail, they say. And certainly Manuel knows retail backwards, having worked with some retailers of the biggest ilk and now also with the suppliers for so long. So the details of how you approach the Chinese are very, very crucial. And they are all here for you to take on board. So go to the show notes and take notes. I have certainly taken some serious notes. One other thing that he said about quality control, which I thought is so simple and yet absolutely true, is that one or two defects will result in, you know, so half or even 80% of your overall defect rate. Now, so for an example, in my case, I had a product with a Duff battery cover, and just about, I would say, 80% of the complaints, that's off the top of my head, but I ought to analyze the figures, I have just come from that one complaint. Now, they've got a new model coming out. I'm having a sample sent, and that will hopefully take care of about 80% of my problems. And actually, funnily enough, the 80-20 principle, one of the people that invented it was, in fact, a quality control person who was trying to find an efficient way to deal with quality control issues in production processes. So that is no coincidence that 80% of the problems come from 20% of the flaws. That is one of the places the 80-20 principle came from. It just goes to show how deep the 80-20 principle is, doesn't it? It goes everywhere in life. Now, if you want to get input from people like Manuel or myself, or Peter Zapf is in the Facebook group, and Danny McMillan, he's sort of the glue that holds these people together. He's just an amazing collector of great people, apart from anything else, his own expertise. He's just quite a guru of that. Hats off to him for that. So if you want to be dealing with such people and getting advice from such people and other people at a good level as well, then get yourself over to the Facebook group, www.amazingfba.com/FBF, as in face, B as in book. There's lots of newbie questions being asked, and there's lots of sophisticated answers as well. So it's quite an interesting mix, actually. About 325 members last time I looked. So it's kind of got that Goldilocks size where it's not so big that you have to trawl through a million posts, and not so small there's nothing happening. I'm not suggesting that it's the only Amazon group that you want to be a member of, but likely if you're listening to this, you probably listen to half a dozen podcasts and, you know, billion and one Amazon groups. So don't drown in information, guys. Just try and be focused on where you interact. But come over there. I'll try and get myself over there every 2 to 3 days and answer any personal questions you have put to me there as well. It's a good chance to get access to me. Otherwise, you can only access me on email if you are a mentee. But I have a deal for you which might be of interest if you want me to give you some personal input into your business.
Hey, this is Johnny Dumas of EO Fire, and you're listening to Amazing FBA with the marvelous Michael Veazey, the place to be for UK-based Amazon entrepreneurs. You must be prepared to ignite.
Thanks to John Lee Dumas there of Entrepreneur on Fire for that wonderful audio bumper. That was my reward for leaving him a podcast review on iTunes. And you can get the same thing. Just go to www.amazingfba.com/iTunes review, or go to the blog amazingfba.com and look for leave an iTunes review in the menu bar. And then you just need to leave a review, take a screenshot of it. If it takes you 24 hours to get the review, don't panic. Then email that to me at michael@amazingfba.com. Phew, so why do this? Well, because I will offer you in exchange, in return, a free email consultation on your biggest Amazon problem right now. This is normally only available to members of my mentees. There's only six of them at the moment, and it's sort of between five or six people. So it's very, very limited access to me on email. If you otherwise email with your questions, I will simply respond. You need to put it up in the Facebook group. So I can't give you one-to-one help normally, but this is your opportunity to get it. So if you want to do that, guys, just leave an iTunes review, take a screenshot, email it to me along with your question, michael@amazingfba.com, and I will personally answer your query in detail. That's it. Thank you so much for your attention. I really appreciate it. Now, over to you. First, 80-20 everything. Learn the critical few. Maybe there's one thing in this podcast that can make all the difference. Find that thing. 20% of inputs, give 80% of the outputs. Which are the critical few for you? Then take action. Imperfect action beats perfect inaction every single time. Finally, and not least, review. If you've made mistakes, learn from them. If you've made a success, duplicate it. You can't do that unless you look back. So in summary, learn the critical few, then do, then review. And then, my friend, it's up to you. That's it. Thank you so much for your attention. Speak to you in the next episode.